Make It Right, the manufacturing podcast.
If you're a leader today, perhaps you can relate to the Chinese proverb, it's lonely at the top. Leadership has never been easy, but the pace of change and the shifting makeup of a workforce that is team and machine has made leading a big challenge. Welcome to the Make It Right podcast. I'm Janet Eastman, and this week on the show, my guest is Dave McEwen. He is the founder and CEO of Outfield Leadership, who speaks, coaches, and trains on the mindset, skill set, and toolkit needed to master the craft of leadership. His goal is to help organizations build a culture of real, authentic, but ultimately results-driven leadership. And he believes we need to reimagine the art of leadership so that it's authentic and purposeful. Dave, I'm excited to have you on the show. I think we're going to have a great conversation.
It is great to be here, Janet. I am looking forward to it, and thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. So let's go back a few steps and figure out, or you can tell me, how you actually became interested in this whole art of leadership.
Sure, happy to. I think that it all started, I grew up in the 80s and 90s and sort of started to come of age with the first tech boom when, you know, people were making crazy amounts of money off of products that just didn't seem like they necessarily provided long-term value. And I was just fascinated back then just about the concept of how you could start something from nothing and make value out of it. And I think that piqued interest in business in general for me, which then ultimately led on to, well, what does it mean to be a truly good leader, to get the most from your people? And so I went to college back in the UK. I studied at the University of Glasgow and studied business and management there. And really at that point began to unpick for me what it meant to be a great leader. So that was where it all started for me, and it continued throughout my career, which I'm more than happy to share with you or go in a direction that you'd like to take it in.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, your basis is leadership. That's been your focus. I know you've done some stuff for Inc. magazine, etc. So just give me a quick look at some of that involvement, and then we'll move on.
Sure, happy to. So I started my career actually back in the UK in Accenture in the IT consulting division for them. And I think that was my real first time that I got firsthand experience of what it meant to be a good leader. And I began to realize that it wasn't necessarily functional expertise or functional understanding that allowed you to get the best from your team, but that it was really those leaders who were able to build a compelling vision and bring people along that sort of stood the test of time. I then moved over to the US a number of years ago and joined the family business, a company called Predictable Success. And we were an organizational growth and leadership development consultancy company. And that gave me the opportunity to work with senior executive teams to help them build true scalability in their business and essentially to help them balance the creativity and innovation that you need to get a business off the ground with the systems and processes that you need to scale. You'd mentioned Inc. magazine. At the time when I was working with Predictable Success, I was privileged enough to work for a brief time on a joint venture with Inc. magazine. For those of you who are aware, they run the Inc. 5000 Awards every year, where they award the 5,000 fastest growing privately held companies in America. And we ran their consulting arm for a year or so. And that gave me an incredible insight into working in fast growth organizations who were essentially battling the complexity that fast growth brings. And so it was through that journey that I was able to, I guess, take those initial seeds of interest in leadership through my academic career. And then all of a sudden I found myself working with leaders to help them become better leaders individually and for their team and organization.
Okay, so you have a lot of depth and you know what you're talking about. That's for sure. There's no doubt about that. It's kind of, it's an interesting landscape that you've crossed. And so I'm sure you've picked up all kinds of interesting leadership tactics and whatnot through that time. So at this point in time, you actually say that you believe that there is that the current approach to leadership is broken and that there is actually a leadership blind spot. So do you want to explain that to me?
Sure, happy to. You know, I think that it's interesting, the field of leadership and what we see and hear in the media is always the newest and the sexiest and the most interesting. And it would lead you to believe that we're undergoing this sort of radical shift in the way our organizations are run and the way in which we approach developing our people. But the reality is that actually you look across, particularly in this country, so much of how we run our businesses and how we lead our people is still grounded in that old industrial era way of thinking, kind of that top-down planning, top-down management, everything rolling downhill, all about essentially creating shareholder value. So many of us still work in organizations that have that underpinning the way that we lead. Now, our offices may look slightly nicer and our logos might be slightly fancier and we may use words like agility, but there's such a big pull on that way of thinking. And so as I see the leadership landscape, we know that in so many ways, that way of leading leads to stress and leads to burnout and leads to lowered employee motivation and employee engagement. And that there's a new world that we're moving to, but I don't yet think we've clearly defined that. And so I find that most of the folks in leadership today, not most of them, a lot of the folks that find themselves in management and leadership today are sort of caught between these two worlds. On one hand, this desire to push to something that's more inclusive, that focuses more on a mindful, more authentic approach to how we deal with our people and our teams. But yet at the same time, we're still immersed in this old industrial era way of thinking. And so that's where I think the blind spot comes from and where we need to make a shift.
So how do you see the role of the leader in the 21st century that's still maximizing shareholder value, but bringing the employees in and having like a sort of a much more pleasant work environment? What is the ultimate role now of the 21st century leader?
I think it's a number of things. I think number one, it's to realize that we're sort of caught between this no man's land of, we know it doesn't work completely in the old way, but we're not that sure exactly what the new world looks like. We're sort of in the wilderness a little bit. And so the number one role of a leader is just to recognize that. And I think then once you put that stake in the ground and say, you know, I'm not 100% sure where we are, that takes vulnerability. And I think one of the mindset shifts that need to happen is away from this, the leader always has to be right, always has to be sure, always has to be decisive. It's okay to say, I think this is where we're going. I'm not 100% sure if that's right, but will you come with me on this journey? And the second thing then I think linked to that is this focus on helping our team achieve our common goals, and in doing so, helping them become the best versions of themselves. I think we're moving much more towards the leader as a steward, the leader as a guide, rather than the leader as a hero and as a savior.
Mm-hmm. So what do strong leaders really need to understand about themselves so they can lead purposefully? And I know that you've talked about this in the past. You talk about leadership mindset, leadership maturity, and leadership purpose. So can you sort of outline what those three pillars are?
Sure, happy to. And where it stemmed from was, when I look at the field of leadership, we spend billions of dollars every year on leadership workshops and books and programs and keynote speeches and retreats and all of that. And yet we're still seeing this blind spot in leadership. And I think a part of that is because a lot of the approaches out there are typically behavior or competency based. You know, they say, if I could manage my time better, I'd be a better leader. Or if I could have difficult conversations more effectively, that I'd be a better leader. The reality is that's a lot like taking your car into the garage for a lick of paint when the engine needs replaced. Mm-hmm. And that actually we're seeing this movement towards a true understanding of who we are as a leader. And so call it what you want, call it your leadership brand or your leadership identity, which is the word that I choose to use, which is, who are you as a person and how does that show up as a leader? And in in those leaders who truly get this, there are three components that they understand. Number one is that we all have a different leadership mindset. So it's how we approach problems. Some of us are more risk averse. Some of us crave risk. Some of us are more process oriented. Some of us are more likely to kind of shoot for the moon and see where we get to. Some of us are more driven towards action. Understanding your approach to decision making and your approach to managing challenges in front of you is essentially having a deep understanding of your leadership mindset. And there are really four key leadership mindsets that are out there, which I can touch on in a minute for you. But that's number one. You've got to get a clear understanding of what your leadership mindset is. The second thing in understanding your leadership identity is your leadership maturity. And by that, I don't mean the number of years that you've been in a leadership position. What I actually mean is the ability that you have to use your leadership mindset for good rather than being controlled by it. A lot of the research out there shows that leaders can mature on a similar spectrum to how we mature as adults. We can go through our childhood, we go through adolescence, we go through adulthood, and then on to our peak and our prime. And in the same way that an adult truly matures and develops a greater understanding of the connectedness that they have with others around them, so too does a leader whenever they go through their own leadership maturity cycle. But the difference is, well, actually not the difference, in the same way that you can come across a 40-year-old man and know that they have the maturity of an 18-year-old, leaders can get stuck in particular growth periods of their journey where they're struggling to really own their leadership mindset. And in fact, in the opposite happens, their leadership mindset begins to own them. And then the third thing of your leadership identity is your leadership purpose. So why do you get up every day? What is it that you do? Why is it that you do what you do every day? What is the legacy that you want to build? And it's not until we get an understanding of those three aspects that we can really get a baseline of how good or how an effective leader we are. And at that point, then we can begin to build skills and competencies off of that because we understand our foundation.
Okay, so this sounds like it's a bit of a deep dive for somebody who's looking at who they are as a leader. But you did talk about that there are the four leadership mindsets. So I think, you know, anybody listening can kind of figure out from what you're going to tell us here which one of them they are, and then which one of the other three they might have bits and pieces of. So what are those four leadership mindsets?
Sure. So four leadership mindsets that typically appear in group and team interactions. The first one is the innovator mindset. And typically innovators are blue sky thinkers. They think about the long term. They're able to see things that other people can't see in front of them. Most successful organizations are started by an innovator. They're typically charismatic. They've got a big drive to start something new. And they need risk in their life at the extreme end. And they crave risk. It's something that's what they get their kind of endorphin rush off of. And innovators are great for helping us see what's possible. They're great for pushing a team to kind of new heights and new depths. But the problem with an innovator is they can be so easily distracted by what's new, what's shiny, what's exciting, what's in front of them that they can get so distracted. And so whilst we love our innovators and we need them to help us get things off the ground, they're not sufficient to really have a cohesive team. And so that leads us to the second leadership mindset, which is the implementer mindset. And implementers don't get a whole list of fancy adjectives, nor would they necessarily thank you for it. Implementers just get stuff done. So implementers are the sort of folks that get the endorphin rush from scratching things off their to-do list. You give an implementer a problem and they're kind of like the MacGyver of the team. Give them the problem with, you know, a bit of string and some chewing gum and a couple of pens and pencils, and they'll fashion a solution. It might not be pretty, but they'll get it done. And implementers and innovators are a very good symbiotic duo. In fact, in the early days of most successful teams and organizations, there's usually somebody with an innovator mindset and somebody with an implementer mindset. They're very good at just starting with a blank sheet of paper. The innovator sets the vision and the implementer goes and gets things done. That brings us to the third leadership mindset, which is the sustainer mindset. And if the implementer and innovator are able to get along well, it's typically because their focus is on doing the right thing. Whereas for a sustainer, their focus is on doing the thing right. So while an implementer may go through walls to achieve an end result, they have a tendency to cut corners or to seek forgiveness rather than permission. Whereas for a sustainer, we've got to make sure that we follow this process in the logical order. That's what it's there for. They're much more linear minded. They think in terms of repeatability. They think in terms of systems and processes. And sustainers are so vital for helping us build scalability into our team or our division. If we're just running an organization with an implementer and an innovator mindset, we're essentially making stuff up every single day. We're reinventing the wheel every single day because that's what excites us. That's what we love to do. We love to just set a high bar and a high goal, say yes to the customer and then deliver it. But over time, that can break down in a complex business. And so our sustainers are great for helping us put in place systems and processes that help us scale. The fourth style then is the collaborator. And for the collaborator, they almost are not concerned necessarily about what we're trying to achieve or how we're going to achieve it. They're more concerned about the folks in the team. So is everybody comfortable? Does everybody feel aligned? Does everybody feel heard? Does everybody feel listened to? They're the sort of folks that say, hold on, I don't think we can make a decision because we don't have every voice in the room. And they're really good for building cohesion in a team. They're really good for building morale in a team. But on the flip side, the problem with our collaborator friends is sometimes they'll not want to move to action, but for fear of hurting or offending somebody in the group or the team. And so those are the four leadership mindsets that kind of appear. And you touched on it earlier, Janet, which is some of us typically lead with one of these, but we might have two or three of these kind of running in the background for us. And a really successful cohesive team has bits and pieces of each one of those to really help us ensure that we're making the best decisions that we can.
That's Dave McEwen, the founder and CEO of Outfield Leadership. He has spent years investigating and digging into what makes a good leader, and he works with leaders and their teams as a coach and trainer, and also as a keynote speaker to help them reimagine the art of leadership so that it's authentic and purposeful. As Dave outlined the four leadership mindsets, did the switch flip for you as it did for me? Because I had sudden clarity on why some people on my team were the way they were. Maybe the same thing happened to you. Next time on the show, Dave and I are going to talk about the three levels of leadership maturity, and these can have a massive impact on your business. And interestingly, we don't always maintain our leadership maturity once it's achieved, because stress and challenges can lead us to regress. I hope you'll join us next week when we continue our conversation. In the meantime, if you want to discover what your leadership mindset is, you can do an online assessment on Dave's website. It's www.outfieldleadership.com. And if you're looking for more leadership and manufacturing insights, you can follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and YouTube. I'm Janet Eastman, and until next time, thanks very much for listening to the Make It Right podcast.